Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie.
Hello, dear friends of good music. This is Tom Schulz speaking. You are listening to the Elbphilharmonie Talk. Today you will hear me in conversation with Asmik Grigorian. Asmik is a singer who has come to fame 4 years ago, I would say international fame 4 years ago, when she was singing an amazing Elektra from Richard Strauss's opera in Salzburg at Salzburger Festspiele. Ever since, everybody is just crazy about her, and for all the good reasons, because she's a very, very passionate and very uncompromising artist. And in during the Internationales Musikfest Hamburg, she will be performing in Hamburg in the Kleiner Saal of the Elbphilharmonie on Tuesday, 24th of May, the Aliederabend, together with Lukas Geniušas, who is also from Lithuania and a wonderful pianist. And they do dedicate themselves entirely to the works of Rachmaninoff. Now, Rachmaninoff for a pianist, of course, is something that you can't get away from. But as a singer, people hardly know, me including, hardly knew that there was a huge repertoire of songs that Rachmaninoff had composed. So Asmik and Lukas dedicate themselves to this repertoire, and they also made a beautiful, beautiful record with entirely songs and romances of Rachmaninoff's. We spoke about this composer, we spoke about her life, we spoke also about odd things like jewelry and tattoos. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Thanks for listening. So Asmik, thank you so much for taking this time. I'm very happy to see you and to talk to you. We are about 4,000 kilometers apart right now, and 2 hours difference. You are far in the southeast of Hamburg, in Yerevan, in the capital of Armenia. What brings you to Yerevan right now?
My family, my soul.
Your family, your soul. Your father comes from Armenia, or was born and raised in Armenia, so you are...
All my childhood, all my most beautiful memories of the childhood was Yerevan, and also I still have many brothers and sisters here, and so lots of relatives and friends and so on and so on.
Yeah, so you basically spent your holidays then in Yerevan, but the day-to-day life would take place in Vilnius or in Lithuania?
Yes.
Where you were born?
Yeah, I just came actually only for a few days to Yerevan, because I have not been also to visit my father's grave because of Easter and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. So I'm here only for 3 days,
for family reasons. So we talked today also in preparation of your what was used to be called Liederabend in the Elbphilharmonie during the International Music Fest in Hamburg. And of course, the repertoire you choose is a female voice and a piano, but it's not really a Liederabend. It's kind of much more than that. I have heard your record of Rachmaninoff's songs, which I find utterly splendid. And I know that many reviews have raved about the extraordinary depth and quality of your duo. We are very much looking forward for this. And you said it's not really songs, it's little operatic scenes. Why would you choose this repertoire of Rachmaninoff's very little known songs? At least in Germany, they are almost, you know, nobody ever performs them.
You know, it's somehow in my life, everything gets much simpler than it's just, you know, I liked Rachmaninoff. In some concerts, I had already some of the songs. So then, you know, then I met Lukas, and then it's just naturally flowed. It was not like, you know, I was dreaming all my life to sing Rachmaninoff, and then it became true. No, it's just step by step somehow it came to the things which it came. the selection of the songs, it was also many of them was chosen by Lucas, because I also told him, you know, some of them I did already, so let's save time and choose the ones I did. And then, at least for me, which one you like, and then, you know, so Lucas sent me like 30 songs or something. And then I was also reading the text, and the ones which I felt most connected, and also the ones he felt most connected. So we made kind of mix of the things which we feel mostly connected, both of us.
Did he place his choice in order of liking songs? Like, these would be my top 10 out of the 30, or would he just totally leave it up to you to choose?
I don't know. I never somehow even think that which is top, which is not, you know. I always, when people asking what is your favorite things, you know, I never had any favorite things, favorite books, neither favorite actors, neither favorite composers, neither favorite singers, conductors. You know, it's somehow, it always depends on the situation, on the, so also with the songs, I think I could never say which ones are really top. I could analyze and say, okay, probably technically this song was better sung and this one probably not so good, but which ones are more important for me, I could never say, because it always depends on the situation. Maybe in one situation of my life, I would say, okay, now I'm feeling more connected to this song. Next day, I would say I'm now connected much more to that song. And yeah.
But still, I mean, the artistic challenge of singing these songs is something that sticks with you, because you said, I'm intending to record the entirety of Rachmaninoff's songs. And I must confess, I don't even know how many percent of his, 80% of his, so that's probably 20% of what he has composed, you have recorded now. So you could easily fill another 5 CDs with the remaining songs. Yeah.
But, you know, some of the opuses you must record separately. So, yeah. Yeah, well, I would say 5 CDs would be enough to record on the Rachmaninoff. But, you know, that was, it's just, you know, it's nothing which I feel like a necessary to record all the Rachmaninoff. It's, yeah.
So there is not this ambition of filling a gap in the repertoire for one and all. So I was wondering, I mean, the selection is utterly various, I find, and there are different poets who have contributed their poetry. There's this one very young, you might, she died with 25 years, if the biographic annotation is correct, you know, this Galina Galina, these love songs. And most of these songs, as far as I get them, are about this dark side of the moon feeling towards life. Is this, I mean, what is it that attracts you so much in these songs?
I don't know. I think there is, you know, I would say it's very emotional songs. And for me, I think the emotion, it's something very, very important in our life. And emotion, it's something which makes us grow as fast as we can. And if we also, you know, if we take happiness, if we take sadness, if we take this, you know, really deep sadness or this deep longing for something, I think those things are something which we could say, this is a human being, and and I love human beings very much. So for me, all those emotions are so dear to me. So probably that was attracts me mostly. And also, when you have such a huge scale of emotions, you can play with it as you wish, because somehow in this CD also it was a bit kind of, I tried, at least it was not so much on purpose, but I tried to show some of the songs were very here and now, very present. Mm-hmm. And some of them they felt for me very much more far, like more cosmos and yeah, moon, but not too much of earth thing. But of course, it was connected also to my father, to more like, let's say, we can say, you know, some of the songs were for me death, some of the songs were more present like life. And actually, for me, it was very interesting how I choose the song, which sometimes all the people would say, okay, this song, it's so present. And for me was, no, this is completely from another world, you know? And this, so I think I, for me, it's very interesting how, if you have a scale of emotions, you really can play with it in the way you want.
Yeah, it's a way of theater also, I think, you know, it's the broad stage in a way. And you have released an EPK, like a 3-minute video of the recording process, which I find very impressive. I mean, it's in black and white, and it's very focused on you and of Lucas, of course. And the way you sing these songs is utterly physical, I find, which is, of course, also related to the emotional qualities, because the emotions happen to reside in our body. But you really take it to a very, I find, fascinating extreme, by really like going into everything, and it's not mimicking. It's something like you would go really, really deep with the expression of it. And you can do that in the studio. You can't probably do that in the same extreme on stage. How do you feel about this? This physical aspect of your vocal art?
I don't know. I never thought about that, but it's, you know, my physical body is part of me. So of course everything is connected to me. So my body always reacts to what I am, to what I say. And yeah.
Yeah, but you kind of listen to every little something you sing, and you seem to trace it somewhere in yourself. In order to make it real, you need to connect on a very deep level with it, and that makes it also very fragile, I find, because it seems at least very, very personal.
I could never, it's always the way I do opera. I can never say any single word, and it's always, it's in opera, in my work, it's my personal life, or any, you know, statements or any word. I cannot say any single word if I don't have personal feeling about it. I cannot citate the book if I don't have connection and explanation what that exactly means to me. That's why each song, each phrase, there is nothing which I just tell. Every single word has particular connection to my own feelings, my own knowledge and experience and whatever. It's very personal, but this is the way I work in general. I can never tell any story. I would never do that if I don't have nothing, any personal connection to it.
Is this more also sometimes a curse, probably, because sometimes you perform under circumstances where it's maybe not that easy to access these deep connections to the pieces, and then you could still fall back on technical aspects and just, you know, fake it in a way, but it doesn't feel like this is you.
It sometimes can happen, but I'm very grateful and lucky person that it mainly, it was very rare situations when sometimes it can be hard if, let's say, you meet a director which you don't really feel comfortable and you don't really believe in the things which you are doing. It's too hard. You cannot go because you don't believe it. The story, it's so unnatural for you that you really cannot go and found this personal story. Then it can be hard because I'm still trying, and then it takes a bit too much energy.
It's like
because
climbing.
If you want to make audience believe, you must believe. And sometimes to found this, you know, believing in yourself. Normally, I said, you know, I'm the lucky one, so I never have problem with that. But there was kind of situations in my life when you think like, oh my God, I cannot do that. because I cannot go and act and lie. I don't know how to do that. But if you want to do that honestly, you just cannot simply understand because it's way too far from you. And
so that would also inform your choice of directors probably now that you know yes. this person I can work with and this probably I say no right from the start because I know it's not gonna, you know, we're not gonna match in an artist on the artistic realm. Yeah. I must say, when I saw this EPK, by the way, this tattoo on your left arm, what's that? That looks very interesting. What is it?
It's me. It's my daughter painted.
Your daughter painted it? And the tattooer would just copy it? Yeah. Tell me.
It was just, I never had any tattoos and never actually wanted to have. But it's as everything in my life. And it was so funny because I talked with some friend of mine just night before. And I said, I love tattoos very much and it looks beautiful on other people, but I would be very careful. I would never do because it can look rough on me or very Asian or whatever, you know. So it's, I would say kind of, I would be careful with tattoos. And not Asian, but Eastern, you know, all those. So kind of, it's the same, like I am very carefully wearing gold or something because it particularly gives very big, you know, character. Mm-hmm. And then next day she painted this painting and then I thought like, okay, maybe shall I do some dress with it? And then I said, no, I go to do tattoo. And I went the same day I did the tattoo and he was like, but just yesterday we talked that you would never do. So that's what I am actually. Yeah.
Very spontaneous and going through with it, with the decision. Mm-hmm. How old was your daughter when she did this painting? I mean, she's 5 now, right? 5 or 6, what is it?
Yeah, it's just almost 6. I think it was maybe 2 years ago or something.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so this is the tattoo part of the EPK. The other thing is I felt reminded of a person like Patti Smith, actually. You know, the vigor, the passion, the imbuedness of poetry and pain and love for things. Do you feel any connection to her? I mean, do you ever listen to her stuff or is it just very far away for you?
Not really, actually. I'm not. Now I started again somehow. I started to drive a car and with a car, it started to come back the music in my life because normally all those when I was a teenager, I mainly never listen to music because I'm so much in the music that I mainly never do.
But now you begin to listen to other people's
music.
So I
could not say no, that I have connection.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's somehow coming back just because of the car.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes there may be some spiritual relations to people who you maybe even don't know or are not aware of, but then people see it and say, wow, this is a certain color of energy or mixture of energy that reminds me of another artist, and that was just that what came to my mind. Then a little side note, you just spoke about wearing gold. Are you more a gold or a silver person when it comes to jewelry?
Normally I'm not a jewelry person at all. Mm-hmm. Just if it's something very interesting, then yes. Normally I don't really like jewelry a lot, but I love some special things, Of course, if it's gift, then it's a memory. If it's, you know, some special stone, then, you know, it's kind of, I like, the jewelry I would never wear just to be beautiful. It always has some particular meaning to me, or it's a special gift, or it's a special stone, or it's something special in it.
Lukas Geniuszas, this piano player, is this an old acquaintance of yours? Have you been knowing each other for ages, or how come you choose him?
Not at all, actually. I know his father very well. We worked with his father. My mother was singing a lot with his father, and of course I knew Lukas as an artist, but we never met actually. And somehow, when I made a decision that it will be Rachmaninoff, it was the only name which came to my mind that it's absolutely 100% supposed to be Lukas.
Because you had heard him play Rachmaninoff live, or did you know his recordings, or what made you so sure of him being there?
He's just amazing.
It's true, he is amazing, yeah.
And that's it, yeah. He is amazing, and I was so happy and that somehow I made this decision because, yeah, it was the working with him, it was really so special. The connection was so special, the ability to hear each other. The process was really something. Mm-hmm. And me as a, in general, I'm not, you know, I never have purposes in my life. I am completely person of the process. I must enjoy the process. And I must say I was really enjoying a lot.
So you're not setting any goals. I want to reach this. I want to reach that.
No.
But you don't feel like I'm only going with the flow person. You feel like very decisive. I mean, you are, the choices you make may be in the moment, but they are totally your mm-hmm. choices, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's very interesting. It's actually, yeah, it's probably, I have this two sides because normally I'm very flow person. I flow, but my flow is really about the process. I must enjoy the process. But the choices, yes, you're right. It's always my choices and I understand that it's my choices. That's why, you know, it doesn't matter what goal it will be. I still know that it was my choice and I take that as a, yeah, with my own responsibility
that's
to it. I don't know. I never believed in my life in purposes because purpose, it's something for me which is created by our mind. And I think it's never as strong as this nature, or I call that sometimes need. But, you know, with the words, it's sometimes very difficult to explain because I don't talk about need of something. I'm talking with this inner really need. It's so for me, when I make any decision, when I start, let's say, to sing, the singing for me, I don't have any purposes. It's a need. I cannot live without singing. It's the same need for me as eat or drink, you know. So I talk about this need, and I think this feeling, it's always much stronger than any purpose.
Yeah, that's what they would probably call an urge, you know, the inner need of doing something. And
yes.
Also, mm-hmm. I mean, it lies in the word itself. It's a vocation. You seem like a... like a vocational, if that word exists.
I don't know
like,
what that means, I'm sorry.
You have to sing. Vocation means, in German it's Berufung, you know, you are...
mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
You are called to do this.
I know this word.
By some higher force.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know the word.
Yeah.
You know, you can be berufen to be a professor somewhere, but Berufung also
yes.
means, this is my life
yes.
purpose. And then we come back to
yes.
to the word of purpose.
Yeah.
So this mm-hmm. this matching of... what you are here to do in life and what you are actually doing in life must also be something very satisfying, isn't it?
Yeah. They, yeah.
Has there... And
so it's that's why this is, you know, the feeling how I feel in the things which I do, that shows me I'm in the right place or not. Because if I am somewhere where I don't feel comfortable... then I think this is not the place where I'm supposed to be. And somehow I had this feeling very, I think, clearly from when I was a child. I don't know from where. Maybe some of the parents... No, I don't believe my mom said that because I think she has a bit opposite thing. But somehow I always had very strong knowing that if you don't feel comfortable, I don't say that, you know, of course, this light, I don't want to do that, then I go. No, if you do everything and you still don't feel good where you are, then go. And I always say you must leave from, that's what I also say to my kids. If you don't feel good, just leave. Never be in the place where you don't feel comfortable.
Interesting, because sometimes you need discipline, you know, sometimes you need to stay in a place even
yeah,
if it's not
of course,
comfortable.
Discipline, it's, yes, discipline is another thing, but it's, yeah,
if we still, as I said, if we still stay somewhere when you don't feel, you know, yeah, comfortable, it means you still want to do that. It means something you're still getting. But sometimes we are, as I said, if you do everything, but nothing really satisfying you, that's the thing which, yeah, I don't, that's what I meant, you know, it doesn't mean like, you know, if you are not comfortable a bit and you leave. No, I mean, really, if you do everything and you still don't have any joy in what you do or where you are, then
absolutely, absolutely. And you said your mother was quite the contrary. Did she still encourage you to pursue this trait of your character, to really?
No, I think my mom has completely opposite. This is the generation of the need, but another need, that when, you know, must, not need, but
total,
must.
Total adaptability.
This generation always had, yeah. It was only discipline and only must. And sometimes I look and I think, but where is life in that? Where are you? And where is, you know? So, but I think it's, yeah, it's somehow also a bit the question of generation and also personality, of course.
But could she encourage you still to be different than herself?
I don't know. This is the need. I cannot be not myself. I don't know. I could never, even if I would try my best, you know, to fit in something, I cannot. It's just too strong in me.
That explains why in some way life must be very simple for you. You don't
yes.
ask much questions about Rachmaninoff, yes or no. It's just an instinctive,
no.
Or
I just do. Yes.
An instinctive yes.
Yeah, so in some way, really, my life, it's extremely simple. I never say it's easy. It's very different. It's not easy at all, but very simple. Yeah.
I'm not going to talk in length with you. Yeah, you wanted to add something?
No.
I don't want to go in there in length with all this Salome thing, because I think she's kind of haunting you meanwhile, because it was such a... Mm. extraordinary success you had.
I made my peace with that. It's
you made
okay.
your peace with it. Okay. But it must also have changed your professional life, I guess, in terms of, you know, now you can do whatever you choose to do. But you seem to have been the very same person before. So, like, you
yes.
weren't doing much compromise with anything.
No, I do only exception. It's also something new which I found in the words, the game of the words, that I'm a person which always does an exception. It's one of the most important things for me. It's an exception.
Okay.
But I never do compromises. That's the point. It's a very different thing. So I'm not compromising. And I was mainly always doing what I want to do. Of course, the ability to choose, it changed. But it changed also not as much because of the Salome only, but also because my son grew, so I didn't need to do so many things. So, but of course, with the Salome, it came completely different status and different power, which is incredibly important for me because, yeah, it's amazing to be able to choose also your partners. It's a gift. It's really, for me as an artist, it's a huge gift.
I was thinking, you know, after Salome, the remaining record industry representatives must have lined up in your dressing room and asked for, can we make a record? Please, can we make a record with you? At least this would have been the case 20 years ago, you know, when the record industry was still thriving.
Yeah, then.
And I think it was still the case, wasn't it?
It is. It is still, but as I said, you know, I'd never do anything which I don't have 100% connected, and there are plans to record things, but again, it's coming step by step. If I have something to say, I will say. I don't have a need to record just for recording. I don't have a need to be remembered. Maybe if I think about my kids and myself, like thinking, okay, I'm lucky and happy that I can listen to my father's recordings. So this case, yes, but still, it's not enough to make recordings. I must burn. And if I don't burn, I will not do that. Because I don't see that, what for? I mean, again, you know, if I say something, I must have something to say. I don't want to just talk, you know? Mm-hmm. But there is a plan, and yeah.
And you will stick with Alpha, with the label you have done the Rachmaninoff on.
I love Didier very much. I love Alpha very much. You know, I don't have any exclusivities, because this is, for me as an artist, it's very important. I always want to have this, my choice to be free, my choice to do whatever I want, my choice to work with the people I want any second. If I want to have the freedom to know that tomorrow, if I want to change my mind, I can change my mind. But at the same point, I'm actually a very loyal person. And if I really love somebody, or if I like somebody, or if I feel good, I don't see the reason why I'm supposed to change. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, of course, curiosity can, you know, but again, it's always, I think everything, it's possible. The same with, you know, Didier or some other companies, which, you know, let's say also I have great connection with Sony, or, you know, so if one day I would say, you know, I want to try Sony just because of the team, I could always speak with Didier. And if we, you know, I always say, if we are honest and if we explain normally what's the purpose of it, why I would love to try something, then I think, you know, we all are human beings. We always can find the solution. Mm-hmm. And yeah. But all the possibilities which Didier and Alpha gives me, it's just amazing. The quality, the respect to the art, not only to the artist, the freedom of choice. The team, what they propose. Mm-hmm. I love them.
Yeah, there's a great deal of dedication in their work. You can feel that.
Connection.
That's true.
I'm sorry, it was the beginning, I could not hear.
There is a great deal of dedication in what they do, so they are really committed to their art.
Yes.
Asmik, you will be returning to the Elbphilharmonie, and you have been in our hall, I think, twice in the Grand Hall, and for one kind of mixed media thing in the recital hall. What's your memories of Elbphilharmonie? Can you still remember something? You did Shostakovich 14 with Ensemble Resonance and Matthias Görne.
I don't know. I love it. I love the energy of this something very big. Big, but at the same time, you know, it's very, very interesting. Also the balance, because it feels huge, but at the same time, it feels also very chamber and very cozy. Mm-hmm. So I really love Elbphilharmonie.
But then, I mean, now you're going in the recital hall, which is a very intimate space, you know, for the Rachmaninoff.
Mm-hmm. Never have been there.
I think you were. Didn't you perform with these hypersound people in a mixed media program?
Ah, true.
It wasn't very representative, mm-hmm, of what the hall can sound
but
like.
But I don't remember the hall at all, yeah. I must say.
Okay.
I don't really remember even how it looks.
Yeah. I can only say I think you are in for a treat, because it's a very, very beautiful space. And it loves the voice, so you will be carried beautifully, beautifully in this space. Okay, Asmik, I think that was for now, and I just thank you very much and look forward to seeing you very soon in Hamburg.
Pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, dear.
Elbphilharmonie Talk, der Gesprächspodcast der Elbphilharmonie. Dieser Podcast wird vermarktet durch die Podcastbude.